outside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast. This is episode 524. I am Andrew, Andrew in our forum, Andrew NLSC on X. With me as always, my co-host Derek, DV3 in our forum, and DV3G and DV384 on X. Derek, glad to be here talking basketball and basketball gaming with you. To that end, what's on the agenda this week?
Well, you and I just finished playing three games of the original NBA Jam in honor of the fifth year anniversary of you interviewing Tim Kitzrow, the voice of NBA Jam, on the NLSC podcast. And that Christian Laettner 3, Andrew, really, really pissed me off. Andrew and I were in a dogfight with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we were using the Charlotte Hornets. And for the Timberwolves, they have Christian Laettner and Chuck Person. And the Hornets, I was using Larry Johnson, and Andrew was using Alonzo Mourning. And we're playing the original NBA Jam for Super NES. And our audience needs to know, if they didn't know already, that there is some serious rubber banding in that game. There is some serious computer assistance. As in, if you go up in the game, like if you go up by double digits, like Andrew and I did in this game, we went up 17-4 at the end of the first quarter. You are absolutely screwed in the next quarter, right? The CPU is going to hit everything. They're going to be, you know, pushing you constantly. They're going to make you miss every layup at the rim. You're going to start missing dunks. It is insane how big of an advantage the computer gets when they're down. So up 17-4 at the end of the first quarter. At the end of the second quarter, we were down by 4. And we're in the third quarter, and Andrew and I we're just battling it out with this computer. And Christian Laettner on the other team decides to pull up from a few feet behind the half court line for a random three early in the shot clock, no pressure on him, nothing. And he absolutely smoked it. And that at that moment, I wanted to go through the TV and choke Christian Laettner. I got to be honest, that
I
was
absolutely
because we were just such in such a battle. I like Christian Laettner in real life. I don't have a problem with Christian Laettner. I liked him as a player, but that shot was absolutely ridiculous. The only saving grace is a couple plays later, I ended up breaking the backboard with Larry Johnson. And as you stated, that's really cool to see in a game that came out in the early 90s. Right, it's a really nice touch by the developers. But Andrew and I ended up going to double overtime in this game, and Andrew's knocking down threes with Alonzo Mourning like he's Klay Thompson, because in this game, Alonzo Mourning's three-pointer meter, like where the ratings, is three quarters full. So in the original NBA Jam, they're not using numbers; they're using like a power bar, and Alonzo Mourning is three quarters full on speed, three-pointers, dunks, and defense. It's like they didn't even try with Alonzo Mourning. They're just like making three quarters on everything.
One of the best players in that game, easily.
Yeah, he's easily one of the best because he can block shots. He's really good on defense in general. He's throwing it down from everywhere. He's lights out from three. He's super fast, etc. But, you know, we were leaning on some Alonzo Mourning threes and whatnot, but we still ended up losing to some ridiculous BS by Chuck Person and Christian Laettner. And that was a tough loss to take in, Andrew.
1-point loss, double overtime, after getting rubber banded like that in the second quarter. That is a game that was meant to drain you of your quarters, wasn't it? You know, you talk about the original microtransactions, although at least you get to play a fun game when you put all that money into an arcade machine. Yeah, the NBA Jam, pretty much all versions of NBA Jam, but definitely the originals by Midway, Jam and Tournament Edition, notorious for their rubber banding, absolutely brutal AI. Yeah, as soon as that Laettner 3 went in, you know, the fact that he was making as many threes as he was already kind of rough, but to make that one from half court, kind of like a modern All-Star game, Derek, actually, just pulling up from half court for no reason and smoking it. So that was definitely frustrating, but I do love that game. My introduction to the NBA Jam series was actually Tournament Edition for PC. A lot of people played Jam first in the arcades, or they played on Super Nintendo or Genesis first, or Mega Drive here in PAL regions. But I actually was introduced to Jam by the second game, the updated Tournament Edition, on PC. In fact, speaking of Midway Classics, My introduction to Mortal Kombat was also the PC version. So PC gaming has been big for me since the 90s, to say the least. But yeah, even though it was tough, and we had another tough loss as well, using the Suns after winning our first game with the Suns, that's a very fun session. I love revisiting NBA Jam. It is such a classic. It holds up so well. And yeah, obviously, my interview with Tim Kitzer was one of the highlights of running the NLSC.
Yeah, and that was a great interview, and I definitely suggest that people check that out. And before I go on and talk about our sessions on NBA Jam, I do want to point out that there are a lot of people that wanted to choke Christian Laettner, mostly non-Duke fans.
Mostly.
He was not the most well-liked college basketball player. In turn, he was also not the most well-liked NBA player, especially early in his career. But he had one hell of an NBA career, Andrew. He ended up being an all-star, I think he was a fun player to watch.
And also not the most popular Dream Team teammate. Scottie Pippen has turned his ire from MJ to Laettner.
Yeah, and you hear the mumblings from, you know, either players on the team or, you know, people who are associated with the Dream Team stating that, you know, it should have been Dominique Wilkins, right?
Yep.
who should have been on that team and who would have helped the team more than Christian Laettner. But I can't remember who said it, but they made a great point. They said, you know, you really only needed to have eight players active on that Dream Team anyway, right? Really, this is the top eight players because there was just so much talent on that team. Like, having Neek on the team wasn't going to change the results.
Oh,
right?
I said that on it.
They were still going to be...
Yeah, I said once it gets past the eighth man, really, it doesn't matter. Especially the tenth man, especially, but at the eighth man, like winning each game by an average of 44 points, never calling a timeout. I mean, it probably can't get much better than that.
Right, exactly. I also want to point out that in NBA Jam for Super NES, Christian Laettner's 3-point power bar is only half full, but he was out there shooting threes as good as Steph Curry, maybe better, against us. So in his defense, you know, Christian Laettner, the well-known, amazing defender in NBA history, who's won multiple defensive player of the years. I'm kidding, obviously. His power bar is 3/4 full there. So I wanted to point something out. If they are lucky that this game was released in the early 90s before the height of social media, because there is absolutely no way in hell they would have gotten away with some of these flubs on these ratings in 2024 or in 2023. Like, can you imagine, in 2024, they release an NBA Jam style game and they give like Klay Thompson nothing on his 3-point bar?
Yeah.
Like something like that. Like, because if you take a look at somebody like Nick Anderson, so Nick Anderson had already been in the league quite a few years, but in NBA Jam for Super NES, his 3-pointer bar is zero. He can't hit threes, basically, going by this game. Like, they gave him nothing in that bar. But in 92-93, which is what NBA Jam is based off of, he actually took 3.2 3-pointers a game and shot 35.3%, Andrew, which is above the league average. His 3-point bar should be, what, probably 3/4 full?
I would say.
Yeah. So, and then there's other weird ones in here too, like Reggie Miller, who obviously won a couple slam dunk contests back in his day, has his power bar under dunks 3/4 full, right? And Stacey Augmon, who's a much better dunker than Reggie Miller, recorded many more dunks. He had stylish dunks as well. He was known as a dunker.
Plastic
his
man.
Yeah, his dunk bar is only 1/4 full, right? And then, you know, you look at just some of them going across the roster. Ron Harper's dunk bar is only 1/4 full. Danny Manning, who is not a 3-point shooter, has his 3-point bar half full. Jim Jackson apparently can't dunk at all because his bar is empty under dunks. But can you imagine, like, today in today's NBA, like, you know how they gave Alonzo Mourning 3/4 of a bar full on 3-pointers? Can you imagine if they did that with like DeAndre Jordan, if they sported him on the Nuggets for like a new NBA Jam? Like, that would be all over social media. It'd be like, what is EA Sports doing? Or what, you know, because it would probably be made by them. Or they made Klay Thompson like 1/4 of a bar on his 3-pointers. Or something like that. Like, there's no way they could get away with that now, but they were able to get away with it back then.
And we saw those discrepancies carry over into Tournament Edition when they switched to the numerical system. You've got Dino Raja with a 3-point of 9. I think he attempted 3 or 4 through his career and never made one in the NBA, at least. And Juwan Howard, same 3-point rating of 9. And other such weird things like that. And to your point, because it was the early to mid-90s, they didn't have all the resources they do now that they can easily look up. You can consult an almanac, I suppose, if you have one on hand back in the day. But because they didn't, they did have to fudge some ratings. They also fudged some ratings just to balance the teams. But you go back and you look at them, and you do see these really weird ratings that clearly have been fudged for the sake of balanced gameplay, or they're just guessing because you don't have League Pass back then, you don't have Basketball Reference, things like that. So, yeah, they got a lot of things wrong that they probably wouldn't these days, but, yeah, some of them just look so weird.
Well, they had a TV, and there were almanacs and magazines back then. Like, I have trouble giving them the benefit of the doubt, at least in that way, like in regards to Reggie Miller having such a high dunk rating.
Sure.
And Nick Anderson not being able to shoot threes. Like stuff like that.
There's
like,
some obvious
I think
ones.
That,
yeah.
There's some really obvious, in my opinion, rush jobs when it comes to the ratings. But they can kind of get away with it in this game because the game is supposed to be wild and zany and free flowing, right? Mm,
yeah.
It's an arcade game, right? The ball catches on fire. So, and you're jumping 30 feet in the air. So, like, you can get away with it a little bit, but there's no way they would be able to get away with that now. But another one that I was looking at too is the first two games we played was with the Phoenix Suns, and obviously we wanted to put Barkley on the floor. So I was controlling Barkley. Andrew was controlling Kevin Johnson. And Andrew didn't have one dunk, not one, for both games. And Kevin Johnson is a shorter player in the game. You know how they have the different body sizes. They have the big player and the small player, so he's the small player. But Kevin Johnson's dunk bar is actually 3/4 full, Andrew. Which is the same as Alonzo Mourning, but you couldn't dunk once.
I think I might have had one out of a lot of attempts, maybe one.
I'd have to watch the footage. I'd have to see if, because I don't remember it.
Should've
I remember.
More, is the point.
It definitely should have been more. And also his speed, Kevin Johnson's speed, is his bar is only half full, but Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson is 3/4 full, right? So apparently Kevin Johnson is not that fast, going by this game. But I thought you did an admirable job with him. I noticed that you did hit a couple threes, even though he has a low 3-point bar there. And I was happy to break the backboard with Charles Barkley. It's nice to use him in a video game from the 90s, because as you know, he's not in all of them. He's missing in quite a few of the basketball games from the 90s. But we actually ended up beating the Dallas Mavericks with that team, and Dallas Mavericks sported Derek Harper and Jim Jackson. Lucky for us, Jim Jackson could not dunk, so he wasn't throwing it down on us. Derek Harper did it a few times though, but yeah, they were tough to beat. They kept the game close. Both of those guys can shoot threes and whatnot. And then we played that Minnesota Timberwolves team also with Barkley and Kevin Johnson, and I believe we lost by 2.
Yeah,
I want to say in regulation. So that Timberwolves team is tough to beat. I thought we played pretty well, though, together.
Oh, we always do, and we have that great chemistry from On Fire Edition. It's just that the mechanics of the original NBA Jam, including that brutal rubber band AI, do make it more challenging. But I'd be keen to play it again. That original does hold up so well, as I said. And it is also interesting to see the changes in ratings between versions and arcade revisions, and the home ports having different rosters to the arcade version. If you recall, in the original arcade version of NBA Jam, the Mavericks had Mike, is it Isolini? Isolino?
I have never known how to pronounce it. My brothers and I, when we were little, we used to call him Illazunianio, just because we didn't know. have to look up. I know exactly what you're talking about. I have basketball cards of him with the Dallas Mavericks and whatnot.
Second round pick in 1991, of course, and I only know this because I'm looking at Basketball Reference. I was hoping that Basketball Reference would have a pronunciation guide, which they sometimes do for players. For him, they did not. But yeah, he was the original. I think it was him and Harper in the arcade version. And you do have some funny substitutions and funny choices between the different ports of NBA Jam and NBA Jam Tournament Edition, and that is fun to see, of course. But yeah, that first game was a lot of fun, getting that victory in overtime with the Phoenix Suns, playing with Charles Barkley in a 90s basketball game, as you said. breaking the backboard, that 16-bit glass shattering sound effect is very nostalgic, as I said to you in our chat. And we also got a somersault dunk. Everything that could go right in that game, breaking the backboard, getting the win, the somersault dunk, catching on fire. Yeah, everything that could go right went right in that game. So that was easily the best of the session.
Oh, absolutely. But I need to vent a little bit more about Christian Laettner, Andrew.
Of course.
So in 92-93, which is what this game is based off of, Christian Laettner shot 0.5 threes per game in 81 games and shot 10%. However, he was raining them on us from all over the floor, including past half court. That is absolutely ridiculous. So, you know, basically screw Christian Laettner. And I also want to point something out, though. There's certain ratings in there that look off that are actually not off. For example, you're looking at Kevin Johnson's three-pointer rating, and it's less than a quarter of a bar. It's almost empty. And Charles Barkley's is half full. And you would think, did Kevin Johnson shoot better from three than Charles Barkley? And the answer is absolutely not. So Kevin Johnson in 92-93 basically took – he hardly took any threes, Andrew. He took 0.2 per game, and he shot 12%. But Barkley, who attempted more threes in his career than Larry Bird, which is surprising, and he shouldn't have. But in 92-93, he actually took 2.9 threes per game and shot over 30%. So that rating, while it looks off at first glance, it is absolutely not. But Detlef Schrempf, as you know, when the line moved in, he shot 51.4% from three in 94-95 on 2.2 attempts per game. That's amazing, right? And he was known as a very good three-point shooter from that point on, even when they moved the line back out all the way up till 2000-2001. But in NBA Jam for Detlef Schrempf, they show his three-point bar as almost empty. It's under a quarter. And it kind of makes sense. So in 92-93, he was an all-star, but he took 0.6 threes per game and he shot 15%. So some of the ratings do look wrong at first glance, but when you actually look back at the season stats in like 92-93 and whatnot, they line up. So that I find that interesting as well.
And of course, another infamous rating from that game, Brad Lohaus has a very high three-point rating. He was a very surprising inclusion on a Bucks team that probably didn't have a lot of options, to be fair, during that time. It was not a great era for the Bucks, the early 90s there. But he does have one of the highest three-point ratings in the game.
Yeah, so Brad Lohaus in 92-93, he actually shot 2.9 threes per game, Andrew, and shot 37% from beyond the arc, which is way higher than the league average at that time. So he was shooting them incredibly well. And even the season before, in 91-92, he took 2.1 per game and shot 39.6 from three. And his career three-point percentage is 36.1, which again is above league average.
That's
so
true.
Brad Lohaus could shoot him, and he actually deserves that rating that they gave him in NBA Jam.
But I thought that big men couldn't shoot threes until the 2010s.
Tell that to Sam Perkins.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of big guys back then that absolutely could have stepped a foot or two behind the three-point line and shot a very good percentage. And guys like Patrick Ewing and Hakeem Olajuwon, and there's many other bigs that usually just kind of kept it within 15 feet to 18 feet because that's the direction of the teams at the time, that's the direction of basketball, and the direction of the league. You know, you look at a guy like Brook Lopez in today's NBA. When he came into the league in his first few years, he never took threes, Andrew. And then they said, hey, the game is changing. We want you to step behind the line. And he ended up being a very, very good three-point shooter. I think that what you would find is if the direction of the league was different at the time and they were having these big men step out and take those shots, that there would have been a lot of bigs shooting incredibly well from distance. And if you go back and watch footage of guys like Hakeem and Patrick Ewing, those are two of my favorite examples, you'll see them consistently hitting, you know, shots right inside the three-point line, right? Long twos, 18-footers, 20-footers, et cetera. And not just from the corner, but like from elbow extended, top of the key, et cetera. So yeah, Brad Lohaus is a good example of a guy who was 6'11 and could stretch the floor. But yeah, there would have been more Brad Lohauses if, you know, the teams kind of like pushed on the players to shoot those shots more.
It's almost like talent goes back decades, and that talented players then and now, and players who are dedicated to developing new talents and honing their skills will get better. Weird.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those players already had it in them, too. I don't think they needed to get better. I think they had it in them, but it's just the way basketball was at the time. But no, I'm glad that we connected on NBA Jam for Super NES. I also want to point something out. I didn't want to stop playing. And the number one reason why is because of that pace, right? It's up and down. It's fast paced. It's challenging. And you really do have to work together to win. But the thing that separates NBA Jam, even the original, even a game that came out in the early 90s, what it separates it from a game like NBA Playgrounds, and why I thought that overall NBA Playgrounds and NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 were disappointments, it's that pace, right? It's that arcade pace. It's that fast-paced action. And I think that a lot of times NBA Jam is more fun to pick up and play as a result.
Oh, I definitely agree, and that's why I was disappointed with the Playgrounds games too. I think they're solid games, but I have referred to them perhaps slightly unfairly in the past as a poor man's NBA Jam. And yeah, they did fall short of expectations with the pace, with the shooting mechanics. I mean, going back to the ratings, obviously there are some ratings that are higher or lower than they should be in those Jam games. But to that point, you can actually still dunk with players who have a zero rating. You're not supposed to. It actually says in the tip screen that they can't, but you can at least throw down dunks right next to the rim. That one-handed dunk, that simple reverse dunk, you can actually dunk with players who have a zero rating. Same with Tournament Edition as well, or a zero bar in the original game, I should say. And also three-pointers, like you said, I made a couple with Kevin Johnson. You can make a few with the lower ratings, and I think that's one of the things that made NBA Jam special. Yes, the ratings mattered, but they didn't matter to the point that players were completely underpowered. Whereas you compare that to the ratings in NBA Playgrounds, it feels like any rating under 6 is absolutely useless.
Yeah, I think that the other thing that killed Playgrounds is just having a meter for everything. You don't need that in an arcade basketball game.
And the
you
grinding to unlock players as well.
The grinding, yeah. But having a meter for your layups, having a meter for your dunks, having a meter for your threes. I think they did some good things with the NBA Playground series. Like, they had the special moves. It reminds me of like NBA Fast Break 98, you know, with the move only he can make. Like, you can do Akeem's Dream Shake and whatnot. And you have, you know, special dunks and unique dunks for, you know, guys that were great dunkers in real life and everything. So they did some good things, but just that pace, Andrew.
Yeah.
Like, they needed to pick up the pace. The pace crawls in that game. I also want to point out, before we get to our main topic, definitely check out my NBA Live 15 gameplay videos that I've been uploading to the NLSC YouTube and sharing on X, formerly known as Twitter. I had one game that I uploaded recently of Clippers versus the Kings, and the other was Wizards versus Heat with me controlling the Wizards. And I just want to point out, using the Lob City Clippers in NBA Live 15 is unbelievably fun. Throwing lobs to Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, crossing over with Chris Paul. They have so many shooters. That team definitely had championship talent, but I just think that the West was too good at the time. And it reminds me of those Suns teams with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire and Sean Mary and everything. I think that those teams had championship talent, but they were in the damn West, right? And they just couldn't get out of the West. But NBA Live 15 Clippers are incredibly fun to use. And when I was using the Wizards, you know, John Wall is one of the most fun players to use in NBA Live 15 because of his quickness and his dribbling and the fact that he can throw it down in traffic and that he has a sweet looking shot and everything. And he can get steals on the ball and, you know, jet down the court and throw it down. I think that NBA Live 15 has now gotten to the point where it's incredibly underrated. And the more I play it, the more I think it might be my favorite NBA Live on the PS4 Xbox One gen. And I think that if you watch those highlights, you'll see why. You'll see the different things that I'm doing with those players, the different animations that play out, how strong the post game actually can be if you know how to use it and whatnot. So definitely check out those videos.
Absolutely. And you do make NBA Live 15 look awesome. We've said it before that a lot of people that play those NBA Live games don't seem to know what they're doing, don't seem to know basketball. And if you know basketball and know how to control the players in that game, you'll find that that game is a lot more fun then you realize we had a whole episode talking about how we felt it was becoming underrated, and it's one of my favorites of that generation as well. And to your point about the Lob City Clippers, absolutely one of those what-if teams that was still pretty good, but felt like it fell short of their potential, or at least the talent they had on paper. But of course, as you said, the West was extremely strong, much like the 7 seconds or less Suns in that regard. But to that point as well, you know, there was always that question about coaching. Mike D'Antoni's system, Doc Rivers obviously has a reputation of teams choking outside of the 2008 Celtics, of course. So a lot of factors. I mean, it's tough to win an NBA championship.
Yeah, the year the Celtics lost to the Heat in the 2012 playoffs, that series went 7 games. Doc Rivers had the brilliant idea of using Brandon Bass on LeBron and guarding him like up to half court, and keeping Brandon Bass, who was clearly exhausted and clearly didn't have enough the lateral movement to stay with LeBron, he decided to stick with that matchup, and that ended up really hurting the Celtics in game 7 of that series. So Doc Rivers, I was never a big fan of him. Obviously, they won the 2008 title, but he did do some questionable stuff, especially in the postseason.
Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, nba-live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at nba-live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community. So let's get to our main topic. And Derek, as you always do, you throw out a question to the community, and some great responses as always.
Yeah, I was pleased with the responses to this one. I was thinking about what Juicy Shackmeat stated on our Discord. He mentioned, you know, what non-basketball games are you and Andrew playing? And basically, what do you like about those games? So my community question was, what features from other sports games would you like to bring to new basketball video games? And I use some examples like modes or customization or online connectivity options, etc. So thank you to Juicy Shackmeat for making me think of this community question. And I thought maybe you and I can go back and forth before we get to the community's responses and state, you know, what we would like to see in maybe a new NBA 2K or NBA Live that, you know, is in a different sports game.
No, that sounds good. Did you want to start or shall I?
I can start. So one thing that was really cool that my brother and I enjoy about MLB The Show 2020 is the ability to put MP3s on a USB drive, plug it into our PlayStation 4, and create our own soundtrack.
That is cool.
And that, yeah. And I got to point something out. It's not just creating the soundtrack that's it, like during the menus, like when you're in the menus and whatnot. It's also creating whatever sound you want for the player walking out to go up to bat, right? Like their walkout music. But for example, I assigned Big Gun by AC/DC to Mark McGwire because he's on my drafted team. So every single time Mark McGwire goes up to bat, you hear it, but you hear that song blaring from the stadium, but it sounds like it's coming from a stadium, right? Like, it changes the sound.
Oh, it's got a filter.
And, yeah, it's got like a filter.
Nice.
On it, an automatic one. And I just thought that was so damn cool. And you can assign audio in other ways as well. But that's just a perfect way to customize your experience. And that would be really cool if I could, you know, put music on a USB stick, plug it into, say, my Xbox Series X or my PS5, and then, you know, put my own soundtrack on the game and it plays every time I turn the game on. And then I could change the arena music that plays. Imagine what that would do for retro mods too, Andrew, right? Like what music plays during the actual gameplay and whatnot. And like with MLB The Show 2020, they proved that there can be an automatic filter in the game to make it sound like it's coming from the stadium or arena, etc. So I think that would be an awesome addition to a new basketball game, and I think people would have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, I love it. And it reminds me of Grand Theft Auto, for example, where you have on PC a folder for MP3s that you can put the files in there, and it will play them on the custom radio station. So if you don't like the music that's already in the game, although it's Grand Theft Auto and most of us do like the radio stations and their selections of music, that is a big part of the game since the early 3D era, but you do still have on PC that MP3 folder to create your own radio station, which is very cool. And there's also one of the WWE games from the late 2000s. I can't recall which one off the top of my head, but on Xbox 360, similarly, you could actually copy an MP3 to a USB stick, copy it to the hard drive, the 360 hard drive, and use that as custom entrance music for a created wrestler, or I think even assign it to an original wrestler as well. So that kind of customization, you know, it sounds really small, but it can really make the experience.
It goes a long way. And like I said, for, you know, a new NBA game, it would allow people to customize retro seasons and whatnot. If you wanted to create, you know, more of a 90s theme, you can put like the NBC music in the game, or some classic TNT music, or songs that used to play back then for arena music, like I Got the Power or something like that, right? So like there's definitely a lot you could do with it. And people love customization. It's what keeps them on the games the most, sometimes. So what about you? What's your idea?
So the first one that I'll mention, and look, I've been a big advocate for proper matchmaking in NBA 2K's online modes, the connected modes in my career. It is absolutely sorely needed. You can see the controversy that's going on at the moment with the so-called black plates in NBA 2K24. People don't want to play with the black plates because they're usually either poor players or new players. Also, people who've created new builds, which is a design flaw in and of itself. But the point is that people don't want to play with newbies. Experienced players don't want to play with newbies. They don't, certainly don't want to play with toxic players and black plates and other such identifiers are used as rudimentary matchmaking. There is some matchmaking in the game, but certainly not enough when it comes to the wreck and so forth. And I've said it before, but look at what Rocket League has done with its casual and competitive settings, with its robust level up system, with its matchmaking system. That's what 2K Online needs. Look at what Rocket League has done. Great esports league associated with it. Much better than the 2K League, I have to say, Derek. And, you know, that's Rocket Cars. That's not basketball. And I love basketball, but it's just how it goes. Take what Rocket League has done with its matchmaking. Put that into 2K's connected modes, the connected modes in my career. And it's just going to make the experience so much better for newbies and veterans alike.
I love it. So I've never played Rocket League, but I've seen the reviews on Steam. I see how much people love that game from, you know, both from a connectivity perspective and a gameplay perspective. Imagine how proud those developers are of that release. They have to be unbelievably proud. And they gave, you know, what, millions of gamers? I don't know how many people play that game, but I know it's a lot.
I mean, people have been playing Rocket League. It was released in 2015. So going on a decade, it has enduring popularity.
Yeah, and people still love it. So they're obviously doing something right there. So my next one, Andrew, is a game that a lot of people may not have played. And even if you played it, you may not know that it had this customization option. So Troy Aikman Football came out in 1994, and it came out for the Atari Jaguar, Super Nintendo, and Sega Genesis. I had it for the Genesis, and you had the ability in this game to customize your season schedule up to the point where you could even play the same team for all 16 NFL games. And I thought this was such a neat feature. And my brother and I had, you know, a favorite team at the time. And we made it so we played against each other with our teams for all 16 games of the season. Now, I know that's not interesting for a lot of people, but I want you to think about what a schedule customization tool would do for retro rosters, for single season rosters, for, you know, even current season rosters. Maybe you want to mix it up and see, you know, what if these teams played each other instead? What if these teams played each other more often? You know, what if you played this team at this part of the season multiple times as opposed to earlier in the season? There's so many different things you could do with this. And imagine like a schedule customization tool that you could also bring into the online league atmosphere, right? So you get, you know, 30 people on board and whatnot. And then you, as the commissioner of the league, you can make the schedule any way you want. So I would love that feature. I think it would do wonders for people who create single season retro rosters and whatnot. Let's say somebody wanted to create, I don't know, the 94-95 season. Having a schedule customizer would allow them to make it exactly like it was for that season. So, yeah, I'd like to take that from Troy Aikman Football.
Now, that's a great one. And isn't it awesome how these games that are kind of obscure, they're just once-offs, they don't become a successful series, but they still have these really cool ideas that you don't find anywhere else. I love that when I go back and play an old game and discover something like that.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure that the majority of our listeners have never played this game. Maybe some have never heard of it. But that feature is something that I don't think I've seen in any other video game. So like you said, it is really cool to see that they were doing that stuff.
And it would definitely be useful for mods, as you said, single season rosters, retro rosters, future rosters, current updates for older games. And it is interesting that we haven't got that in customization. We have the schedule randomizer, of course, in many games that have dynasty, franchise, season mode, etc., but not in-game customization of the schedule. And it just goes to show that there's a lot of stuff with roster customization or game settings, game customization, that hasn't been done. We can talk about a lot of things with roster editing, actually. The ability to enter career stats, the ability to enter draft information, and other bio data that we still can't access in over 30 years of basketball video games and create a player.
Oh, no, totally agree. I want custom teams to be brought back, Andrew, you know, in the offline sphere, right? Like being able to create a custom team, you know, create your logo, basically have your MyLeague/MyNBA court creator, jersey creator, team locator, all of that stuff brought offline. Like, I think that would do absolutely wonders for roster makers. I think it would be unbelievable, and it would produce some of the best rosters that you've ever seen. So that is definitely something I wish they would do in the future. And I've said it before, I think that that's part of the future of sports gaming, specifically basketball gaming. I think that that's going to eventually happen, and call it a hunch, a gut feeling. But I think that that's part of the future of basketball gaming. So what about you? What's your next one?
Well, I'm going to keep it rolling with the customization options and refer once again to the WWE games. Now, this is where somebody will say that pro wrestling is not sport. It is sports entertainment, but it is certainly sports adjacent. And the wrestling video games do treat it as a real sport. And the level of detail we have with customizing creator wrestlers is beyond what we've seen in pretty much every basketball video game, I want to say. And in some of the recent WWE 2K games, actually have an option to upload a photo similar to the old face in the game that NBA Live had back in the day and put that face on a created wrestler, which is easier than using some of the face scanning apps that NBA 2K has done over the years, and NBA Lives have actually worked better in that regard. I've had much better results with my NBA Live face scans than my NBA 2K face scans, which is why I just gave up on it after a couple of years of trying it. But being able to upload a photo and take that face and paste it on a created wrestler, I mean, how awesome would it be to do that in NBA games? It could be done for retro rosters, obviously, for roster mods, or if you just want to put yourself in the game without having to go through the career modes, just very useful. And also the face sculpting and some of the other options they have for created wrestler, that's the kind of stuff we need in creator player in NBA games as well.
Yeah, so there was a tennis game called AO International Tennis, and it had a similar feature. And the face that you created, you know, using a real picture of the player, and basically, you know, it being flattened out and you being able to edit it in like a photo editing program and whatnot and upload that creation, you know, even though you created the face on PC, people could download it on console. And I think that was damn cool. And so, for example, I did that for Pete Sampras. I actually created a Pete Sampras cyberface on PC. I put it in the game, and then my brother downloaded it using his PS4. So he had that Pete Sampras creation, but on the console. So this stuff can be done, people. Like, maybe they don't consider it a priority. Maybe they think that it would be too complicated for some people. Maybe they don't think that it's worth their time to put this stuff in these newer basketball video games. But, you know, like Andrew and I are talking about, this stuff, it can be done, and it is being done in other games. And that actually gets to my next piece, Andrew, is I think that the face creator, that, you know, the create a player feature in NBA 2K is incredibly poor. I think you would agree. I don't think it's ever been strong. I don't think that you can really make players look like their real life counterpart most of the time. I feel like somebody like MJ Wizard, who has created so many players over the last few years and his work has shared on Operation Sports, I think he's probably the best I've seen at creating players to look like their real life counterpart. But there are games like MLB The Show 2020 where the create a player feature is so robust, the face creator. You can change the shape of pretty much everything on the skull, right? The size of the forehead. You can contort the skull shape in so many different ways. You can make players look exactly like they're really in the game. Guys like Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, etc., like true to life creations. I would like to bring the, you know, face creator tool from games like MLB The Show 2020 into new basketball video games, because they're way behind in the NBA 2K games and in the most recent NBA Lives when it comes to, you know, face creator quality.
And it is so important, because it's how you get new players to look like they're actually original without actually having faces. That was always the thing back in the day, that players, creative players, they looked created, right? They stood out. They were clearly fake. They might as well have been roster players. So actually getting that sophisticated face sculpting like we have in other games, yeah, absolutely vital.
Yeah, and I have one more so we can, you know, get to the community responses, and then I can throw it back to you if you have one more as well. But there's a feature in Tennis Elbow 4. It was also in Tennis Elbow 2013, which allows you to select which year you want to start your career in. And I think that that would be tough to implement in a new NBA 2K game, unless they allowed you to start your My Career using like a My NBA Eras roster, right?
I was thinking that, yeah. That'd be really cool, though.
Right, right. But that is such a cool feature in Tennis Elbow 4, because let's say you wanted to start your career in the mid-90s. Let's say you wanted to start in 1995. You're in the middle of the Andre Agassi, Pete Sampras, you know, Stefan Edberg, Michael Chang, like that era. Or let's say, hey, you want to start in 2010. Well, you're in the middle of Federer and Nadal's prime and young Djokovic, right? So, like, it allows you to customize that career experience. Now, obviously, Tennis Elbow 4 and Tennis Elbow 2013, they don't have, like, the story, right? Like NBA 2K. They don't have to make a riveting story, or they don't have to, you know, make the mode especially deep or anything like that. Like, these games are made by indie developers, but the idea is still incredibly cool. And so I'd love to see that. And then I guess the last one too that I'll just touch on really quick is, you know how NBA Jam 2004 had the black and white filter when you played like the Bill Russell team?
Oh, yes.
And you know how they had the black and white filter also in NBA's greatest games for NBA 2K12? You know, when you played the Bill Russell led Celtics and everything, I would love the option to have something like that, you know, to add a filter, like a black and white filter, or like a 80s filter or 90s filter, etc., to whatever game that you're playing. And those, once again, those games like NBA 2K12 and NBA Jam 2004, they prove that it's possible to do it, right? So it's just basically a developer or a group of developers stating, hey, this is something that I think would be beneficial to this game. Let's do it.
Oh, absolutely. And on Fire Edition, and actually Jam 2010 as well, do have unlockable filters, that 8-bit filter or that 16-bit filter. So we know that enabling filters as an option is something that's viable, it's feasible in games. We've seen that in various basketball games over the years and other sports games as well. And of course, when it comes to tennis, I will obviously mention some Australian legends like Mark Philippoussis, Pat Cash, Patrick Rafter, and of course, Leighton Hewitt.
I just want to point something out. Patrick Rafter was one of my favorite tennis players. His serve and volley game is still some of the best I've ever seen. And I was always a big fan of Patrick Rafter and Michael Chang back in the day.
And of course, Rod Laver, whose name is Graces, an arena in Australia. I do have a couple more to throw out there. And I know we've had FIBA teams in NBA Live before, but taking a cue from FIFA, representing different leagues around the world. Now, we've seen how NBA 2K has been able to incorporate the WNBA, and we've seen it in NBA Live 19 as well. So if they could incorporate some other leagues, and look, this does get into financial viability as well, so it's easier said than done, but it would be really cool if they could add some international leagues to NBA 2K. Not a priority over some of the other improvements or additions to the game that I would suggest, including getting more NBA legends into the game, historical role players, etc. But still, that would be cool to see. I'll throw it out there as a nod to the FIFA games, what they did with leagues from around the world. And an honorable mention to a non-sports game here. Long-time listeners of the show will know that I'm a big fan of the Fallout series, and I'm a big fan of the English YouTuber Many a True Nerd. And John does some great videos where he's making different builds, different character styles, and really weird challenges and things like that. It's really fun to watch him take them on. And it's something that you can't do with my career anymore, because it's all based around the online scene and making the builds for the online scene, etc. I would love to have an offline my career again that doesn't have to be connected to the online mode at all, that isn't as grindy, doesn't have all the microtransactions. It's not, again, it's not connected to online, so you're not going to upset the online balance of the online gamers. Wouldn't want to do that. But like the Fallout series, allow these different character builds where you can have these crazy scenarios where, oh, you're a role player, or you're trying to make the worst player that you possibly can. He's got some series where he makes these terrible builds and tries to finish the game as these really weird and horrible character builds. So I'd love to have an option that brings back that ability to experiment and do weird things and fun things with my career, not just make it a grind for the online scene.
I think that's a great idea, but the first thing I thought of was NBA Shootout 2004, where they had that offline, streamlined career experience that you could take part in, where you could either use an existing NBA player or you could use a created player. And you basically start out, I want to say, in the D League, and you play a bunch of D League teams. They keep your stats, and then you get put onto an NBA team, and then you go through a season, you know, kind of like, you know, if you were doing it outside of a career mode, but your player locked for the entire season and it keeps your stats and it doesn't have all those fun scenarios that you're talking about, but it's that offline, no BS career option. Right. And that's kind of what that made me think of. But I do like your idea as well. And of course, while you were talking, I thought of another one, Andrew, because you can just go wild with these thoughts.
Definitely. And whatnot.
So MLB The Show 2020 also has a feature where you can either play, you know, the regular game with the PS4 graphics and, you know, all the commentary and all that stuff, or they have an option where you can play a classic mode. And if you choose classic mode for that game, it's a streamlined game. I want to say there's no commentary. The graphics look different. They look more primitive, all of that stuff. The mechanics of the game are more in line with something you would see in the early 2000s or maybe the 90s and whatnot. So how cool would that be? Let's say you're 10 games into a season, Andrew, or maybe you're just playing exhibition and whatnot. And you have, let's say you're controlling the Bulls, so you're using DeRozan and LaVine and whatnot, and you're versus the Jimmy Butler Miami Heat, and you state, you know what, I'm sick of playing with these NBA 2K25 or NBA Live 25 graphics. Let's choose classic mode. And then, boom, you choose classic mode, and now you're playing that game with, like, NBA Live 96 graphics, right? Same players, right? You know, you're still playing, you know, a 24-25 NBA season, but you're playing it in a classic mode and classic graphics, maybe no commentary, all of that stuff. And I just think that would be super cool.
I think one of the NHL games did that for one of their anniversary editions. They brought back that camera from the mid-90s and some other settings like that, some retro filters. I believe the Live King might be able to provide some more insight into that. I know he plays that series, but I believe there was an NHL game from EA that had those throwback options, and that would be really cool. And it's funny because back in the 90s, we talked about how we wanted to see all these halftime shows and deep commentary and all this other stuff, but sometimes those bells and whistles, they do get a bit too much, or they do slow the game down with some of the overlays and some of the replays and the halftime shows, etc. So having an old school option to just disable that, and I can see the developers saying, oh, but you want us to not see all of our hard work. Look, most people are going to leave it on, but occasionally when you want that streamlined experience, no, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I would play it. You know you would too.
Definitely.
I think it would be a really cool way to experience the now NBA. Just with that, you know, retro playing option.
So let's see what the community had to say. And Bucky T says, I would love for them to bring FIBA teams back like they did in past NBA Live titles, if possible. Also, a summer league tournament before your season starts so you can get a feel for the team you're starting a franchise or dynasty with. And I think they do actually have a summer league in the latest MyNBA, the latest version of MyNBA. But yeah, like I said, FIBA teams, much like FIFA, bringing in those international teams or those international leagues would really expand that bonus content.
And yeah, you know, it's not just NBA 2K. NBA Live had that, and NBA Live 08, 09, and 10. And I still think that that's a draw. People got to realize that it's not only, you know, NBA 2K is not just America's game, right? Like, there's people that are playing this game from all around the world. There's fans of basketball that, you know, like above and beyond the NBA product and all of that. So I think that that would, you know, be a hit if it was in the game.
I mean, the Patty Mills in 09 and 10 does not look like Patty Mills at all, but I enjoy playing with the Boomers in those games.
Yeah, and Giannis Antetokounmpo didn't look anything like Giannis in NBA Live 14, and I won't use him. I won't put him on the floor because that's just a damn shame.
That is one of the worst faces in video game history, at least since we have actually had detailed player faces. KG says, I would like WWE 2K24 player, creator, wrestler customization to be in NBA 2K. The separating custom options for mustache and beard is what 2K should have been doing. Been asking about it for years. Also the same face sculpting options. And as I replied on X and mentioned earlier in the show, yeah, the WWE games have had some fantastic creator, wrestler options, face sculpting and so forth. Having that kind of face in the game option where you can upload a photo and put it on a wrestler's face. So yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah, I just think that 2K doesn't consider it a priority. I think that's the reason. And NBA Live certainly didn't. I mean, look how poor the creation suite was on NBA Live 19 and whatnot. So I think it's a shame that these companies are not prioritizing customization in that way. It's not like they don't have the tools to do it. They have everything at their disposal to beef up the create a player suite, you know, the ability to, you know, have people, you know, kind of bring that My League team creation suite into, you know, offline, etc. But it's either not a priority, something they're saving for later, or they just don't want to do it. So I have absolutely no idea why it's not better than, you know, what it is.
Dealey Boy says NBA 2K in Unreal Engine. And this is obviously a frequent debate in all gaming circles, really, but certainly basketball gaming. Bringing NBA 2K or another game into Unreal Engine or the engine of choice, what people think would improve the game. And look, I mean, if it improves the game, so much the better. But it, as we've said before, Derek, it goes beyond the engine. It comes down to design principles and how that engine is utilized.
Exactly. I mean, I've played absolutely amazing games made in Unity, and I've played amazing games played in Unreal Engine. I've played, you know, amazing games using Frostbite. And I've also played poor games for all three of those, right? Like, it really comes down to the talent of the developers, the direction that they're going by, and the amount of passion they put into the project, and also how well they know their audience. You know, I do agree that there's differences in different development programs. What it really comes down to, though, is the talent of the person using that program.
And jumping over to our Facebook page now, Royce mentions a Legends Showcase type mode with pickup games. I know he's a big fan of the Legends Showcase DLC for NBA 2K12, which is still available if you get the Game of the Year edition of that game, as I did. And shout out to Royce for pointing me in the right direction in that regard. Also mentions a street of blacktop with different courts to play on. So kind of throwback to some of the earlier NBA 2K and NBA Live games here. And also the ability to choose your court for a game, like MLB The Show games do, which we have had in previous games as well, being able to choose the court independently of the teams, at least in Play Now mode. And also mentions fantasy teams like NBA Live 10 and Moments modes, more challenge modes like some of the previous basketball games.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout out to Royce, who messaged me about March Madness 2006 for PS2. You know, you and I are big fans of NBA Live 06 for the PC, and we've even grown fond of it, you know, the 360 version of that game. But I do think that the games were stronger on PS2 and PC and whatnot. But he brought up that, you know, March Madness game, and I would love to revisit that with you and get up some gameplay footage. He was talking to me about, you know, a couple of the features. He stated that it has a mascot game with 5-on-5, using various schools' mascots playing, which is kind of a cool feature. And maybe we can get some gameplay footage up of that. He also stated that he was going to be picking up NCAA March Madness 2005. So I think the college games don't get mentioned enough because of the popularity of the NBA, but it's nice to see that some of the community is still playing some of those college games.
And we have lost some of those mini games, things like the Freestyle Challenge, where you have the split screen 3-point shootout and dunk contest in NBA Live for a few years there. You know, they're not the most popular modes, but they're fun time killers.
Yeah, I think that the time killers are super underrated, especially when somebody can, you know, get sick of the base game or just needs a break. So I definitely agree with that.
Bit of a palate cleanser for sure. And Royce also mentions having a My Team mode that's more like what they do with the show, completely devoid of microtransactions, which I agree with.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. I think that microtransactions are kind of taking over video games, sports and otherwise, and it's disappointing.
And jumping over to the Discord now, in a similar vein, Shy Guy says, road to the show's progression system, where you hardly have to spend a single dime.
Yeah. I also want to point out that you're hearing the show mentioned quite a bit. From what I'm gathering is that people are more fond of the show before the next-gen consoles. So, like, I would say probably the show 2020, which I believe is the greatest baseball video game of all time. My brother and I are absolutely obsessed with it. We love it. But they're talking about MLB The Show 2020 and prior. And I also believe, you know, from reading comments on social media in relation to their quote-unquote My Team type mode, or the whatever you want to call it, their Ultimate Team type mode, that it is probably the most fair in sports video games. So they are doing a lot of things right over there with the show.
We see a lot of people giving props to the show in that regard. The fairness, the quality of gameplay, the quality of the franchise mode, etc., and the card collecting mode as well, absolutely. And that's a familiar tale, isn't it? That people feeling like the previous generation was superior to what we have at the moment. And people say, oh, nostalgia goggles and all that kind of stuff. But no, I do think this current generation has been a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has. I think PS5 and Xbox Series sports titles have been incredibly underwhelming.
And as a longtime micro gamer, I would absolutely agree that a fair progression system is paramount, and that is, we've gone away from that. That it is definitely about making money, no longer about having a fun journey. You don't need to be 99 overall the first week. Nobody's asking for that. Well, I won't say nobody. Some people are probably asking for that. A majority certainly aren't. But having a fair progression system that allows for a fun journey, that's what we want to see. And finally, Studbucket says, MLB The Show where saves transfer between game versions, and also unlimited offline saves and game modes that can be played after the servers go down, almost any sports game from 2000s or early 2010s. And I absolutely agree with the offline availability of modes. That is something we've lost in recent games, not having even an offline version of My Career. Haven't had that since 2K19. And it has been noted that the saves transferring between game versions has been discontinued in the show, but again, what an awesome option.
So, I mean, obviously that would be huge, right? But I think that there would be a challenge with that. I'm not sure how the MLB The Show franchise implemented that before. But, you know, if your save can transfer to the new game, that would mean that all the art assets from the old game would have to be in the new game in order for that save to function properly, right?
Oh, absolutely. There would be a technical challenge there for sure.
Yeah, that would be the biggest obstacle, and maybe that's why that's not in the 2K series at this time. But also, you got to remember that they want people to spend more time on the newest game creating new content, right? And using the existing content that's in that game. They want you to create a new save in the newest game. So that's probably another reason.
I mean, the games these days are designed to be disposable, and obviously they've always wanted to sell the new games every year. I mean, annual releases are not a new thing in sports games, and there is a call for a new game every year, obviously, but not being able to transfer any progress over, not having any returning gamer bonuses, that would be my compromise there, that you can actually get some kind of a boost if you do have a save from last year's game. Again, don't make your player 99 overall just because you hit 99 in the past game, but have some kind of immediate boost to my career and my team if you made a fair bit of progress in the previous year. Allow something to carry over, some kind of returning gamer bonus.
That would only be fair, but we can't have that, Andrew.
No.
We can't have fairness.
No, we certainly can't. And that might be the biggest thing to bring back from basketball games and other sports games from years gone by, fairness. But thank you to everybody who responded to Derek's question. People, as always, have great ideas about what they want to see in the games, and it's great to see people thinking about these things, Derek, and throwing out those great suggestions.
Yeah, no, a lot of great suggestions. I hope that, you know, developers or decision makers listen to this show, and maybe they take some of these ideas and run with them. That would be great.
I mean, NBA 2K did recently send out their email survey. I did take it, and not a lot of this stuff was covered, Derek, I have to say.
I did not take it. They usually send that survey out each year, and I feel like it's just kind of a, I don't know, just like a marketing thing more than anything. I feel like they're going to implement what they want to implement no matter what. That's just the way I look at
it. No, I definitely, in one of the sections where we were invited to write in our feedback, I did mention the greed, but yeah, I don't see that going anywhere, unfortunately. But of course, Derek, we always do have our old favorites.
Yeah, and you know, I do sound defeated there, I will admit it, but just the way the games have been made over the last, you know, 5 years or so, you know, 4 years, 5 years or so, just the direction of the company and how things only get worse with the money grab and all that stuff, despite people, you know, screaming from the rooftops to, you know, cut it out and everything, and the lack of improvements, in fact, more regression than anything, you know, from a gameplay perspective and all that's like, I don't know. I feel a little defeated.
Sure.
At the moment.
I mean, it's being realistic and it's understandable frustration. But again, to that point, we will continue to advocate as much as we possibly can, encourage people to go no money spent, obviously. And yes, celebrate our old favorites, because we will continue to revisit those just as we did NBA Jam this week.
Exactly. And keep an eye on the NLSE YouTube, because a lot of great gameplay videos are growing up.
With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week and every week, either on the NLSC, nb-live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us and, of course, stay up to date with all of our content. So, Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
Yeah, you can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at D43G and at D4384. You can also find me on the NLSC, D43, and on YouTube, D43.
As for me, I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on X. The NLSC is on X and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. So, thank you once again for tuning in, and until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.